Michigan HockeyCast 3.13, where we talk about sports, specifically the Wisconsin Badgers, and also end with some Culver's chat. Alex Drain, do you like challenges? I do. I was recently challenged by our editor, Patrick Barron. He's also one of the photographers that we use. He said that I need to start segments without using the word so. Success! I have officially started this segment without using that word. So what has been your... see, I just did it. Oh my gosh. What a... counting my chickens. What has been your most recent good, worthy challenge? Is that like your version of so?
I don't know. I mean, you didn't run this by me before the show, so I don't really have a good answer for you.
But you, when I do that, you always like have something ready to go. I have some.
Well, challenge is very subjective.
That's true.
So I don't know. People don't really come up and challenge me to anything.
Was it fitting into the press box this weekend?
Probably more of like finding out where to sit, because everyone was in the wrong places.
You said it was crowded.
Most notably Craig.
But that's to be expected to some extent, right? Like, he's going to sit down. But you were the one who was like, people just sit places.
I mean, they do. There's a seating chart, but then people just go wherever they want.
And that's
more or less
happened. I remember I was going to switch seats probably in the first half of the season to do something. I can't remember why. Oh, it was because the box that we were actually in on Sunday was open, and it was, you know, closer to center ice. So I was like, well, I'd like to sit there. So I went up to Christy, and I was like, hey, I'm going to move into the box next to me because it's open. She's like, okay, whatever. I was like,
well, I mean, remember how empty it was at Thanksgiving for Notre Dame. And then, this weekend was just like, I mean, every box was full. And
well, because Wisconsin brought
radio, and they also brought that fella from the Wisconsin State Journal who covers the Badgers.
Okay.
But also the Detroit News is now sending people, and I think MLive is sending people, and obviously a lot of scouts now. And
there were a lot of just fans.
Yeah.
Did you see? I mean, there was like...
Those were all parents, right?
Sure. And like when they were doing the Wisconsin introductions on the first game, like there was this like eruption below me, and I like bent over, and there's like this contingent of a lot of
Badger fans. Well, the parking lot was more crowded too than...
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking it was because of something else, like there was like a football meeting or something was going on at Schembechler, but it was probably just people in town, which was, I guess, good. It's good that people get to go to games. So that was sort of our intro. The other thing that you had me write down that you wanted to talk about was that Brendan Bichon can wiggle his like head skin.
Yeah, that was jarring. It was one of those... You described it as like a dating profile.
Well, it felt like it, because he kept talking about going for like walks on the beach and taking hikes.
Yeah, it was on the Jumbotron, and it was like, what things do you like to do in your personal life? And like that kind of stuff. And then one of it was like, I think it was your hidden talent.
Your secret talent?
Yeah. And
he just like shakes his head, but like he's wiggling his eyebrows, but then his entire scalp moves, and his hair just starts like flying about. And I was like, it seems like some muscles are disconnected or something up on, like, in his scalp.
It's like the people that can, like, dislocate their fingers and stuff.
Oh, I can do that. I can do the thumbs thing.
Yeah.
But that's gross enough for you, given the face that you just made. Can you imagine being able to, like, move your head skin around?
Yeah. That was very, very weird. That's what I'll say about that.
Maybe we should move on to the hockey game. I believe that's probably what people are tuning in for. Game one was pleasant for the most part. It didn't start that way, though. Michigan did come out looking like they probably hadn't played in a little while, and it was...
Well, the first like 6 or 8 minutes was a chess match with very little going on. Then Michigan gets the first chance for either team in the game, right after that... You know, on like the same play, Wisconsin scores. And then after the Wisconsin goal, the rest of the period up until like the last 3 minutes were pedal to the metal for the Badgers, basically.
Yeah. So Michigan gets a 2-on-1, and Pasta has his shot saved. but it's deflected around and in a really long outlet pass. I went back and rewound this, and it was a really long outlet pass to De St. Paul.
De St. Paul, yeah.
De St. Paul, yeah, that's how you say his name. And he gets in on a breakaway.
Well, and Pearson and York were coming up on the play, chasing the two-on-one, and then they let him slip behind them.
Right.
And then the pass was made up, and he put in a really nice shot right over the shoulder bar down.
And he's a fourth liner too, right? And
sure, fourth line.
That was the thing that kind of bummed me originally. It's like, all right, we know this team's probably going to score because, I mean, look at all their talent and look at their numbers and everything. And, you know, Wisconsin's just lighting people up. And all of a sudden you give up a goal early to, you know, a third or fourth line guy. And it's like, oh, no, this is not the best way to start this game. But then at the end of the first period, Michigan just kind of flipped the script and started creating a number of chances. And the Morgan and KJ and Beniers line looked pretty good and had a chance for a goal, but couldn't really get one in that period. I know you mentioned that you thought, even starting that early, that Badoon, who started in net for the Badgers, who played well against Michigan in their first series, was just a little loose with his rebounds and just not really on top of everything.
Yeah, I mean, this was something I was right about, I guess, but
I think there are a lot of those things, Alex.
I came up to you and I said Badoon looks shaky in the net, and I'm not a goalie scout. I don't really know a lot about, you know, the intricacies of the goaltending position relative to everything else, but you could tell he just was kind of flailing around, right? It wasn't just that the rebounds were pretty big and not corralled well, but he would get out of position really easily, which is something I remember, you know, as Tommy Napier or something with him I've thought about for years, where sometimes, like, the scramble happens, but, like, rather than the ability to sort of stay in position where they need to be, like, he ends up, like, out of the crease or whatever. And yeah, so Badoon was just kind of, like, sliding around and wasn't set very much. And then the big thing that I told you was, how many times did we see a Michigan player skate in past the blue line, take a wrist shot that Badoon saw all the way, went to grab it with his glove, and didn't grab it, and, you know, just didn't squeeze it, and it came off him for a big rebound, and, like, those are easy shots that need to be, you know, hoovered up, and he was not doing that.
Yeah, even if you're not catching him, you need to put them in the corner or someplace that is not dangerous. And he, you know, the puck would kind of deflect, and then, it wouldn't go too far away, but it would be like 4 or 5 feet away. That is, I mean, you never really want that. Like, if you leave a rebound just in front of you, can fall on it, and if you send a rebound a long ways away, okay, you got to run it down. But if you start leaving them, you know, 4 to 8 feet away, you can't really get those. And if someone's there, it's probably a goal because you're not gonna be able to get back into position. And that's basically a lot of what happened in the second period as Michigan continued their strong play that at the end of the first period. Bortolo had a really nice play where a Badger defenseman sort of fumbled the puck at his blue line. He zoomed in, took it away, got really deep on one side of his net because he still had a guy on him and he wasn't going to be able to turn. So he gets really deep. Badoon shifts all the way over in his crease near the post, and Bortolo, instead of either wrapping around or like trying to stuff the puck, kind of just leaves it on the other side of the crease, a nice, easy little dish pass that it didn't look like he was passing to as particular person as he was putting the puck in space, and Brendan Brisson just slides right in and taps it in the open net. And the interesting thing for me about that was that if Brisson didn't put that puck in, Pasta was literally right there too and was going to score as well. It was just a really well-designed and crafted play by Bortolo.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a number of plays like that from him this season. Wasn't really a surprise, but you know, that really started the ball rolling there in the second period.
And it kept rolling right away because as we were taking notes and tweeting and getting everything set, telling, you know, that it's okay, it's back to an even game, Beniers makes a nice play in his own end and gets out past, I believe it was a defender for Wisconsin, leading to a 2-on-1, and he took a shot from the side out a little ways. But this is another one that I thought Badoon probably could have handled a little bit better. I mentioned it to a couple people and they were like, yeah, I probably would have wanted him to do more with that. And it just kind of went through him a little bit off his pad and into the net. And all of a sudden Michigan, who didn't have the greatest 10 to 12 minutes to start, is up 2-1 just a few minutes into the second period.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it's an odd man rush. On the other hand, it wasn't the best shot in the world. And maybe a better goalie's able to save that.
Yeah, but I think you'd probably like that from a guy who, you know, is going to be a goalie for a team potentially making a deep run in the tournament.
Sure.
The other part of this that was really interesting is it was challenged for a high stick in back in.
Yeah, well, and that was interesting because this was another sort of what are they reviewing situation, yeah. Right? Because the first thing and immediately they show us is the offsides.
Right,
and,
which is not close.
And we see that and we're like, okay, that's not what they're challenging. Yeah. Because
it was.
Yeah. And then it takes them maybe a minute or two in the stadium to finally then sort of show us. And then you're like, oh, that's what they're looking at. And it was in the defensive zone where the play kind of begins, where Kent Johnson, I believe it was, knocked the play down out of the air. I think it was a shot from the point that he knocked down. And the stick is...
It probably is a high stick.
It's close.
But...
The person that the Wisconsin Badgers should be complaining about was the camera crew, because we just didn't get a good enough angle, right? When you have those kinds of reviews for high sticks on deflected goals, a lot of times there's that angle where they show and you can kind of see the crossbar, shoulder, like flat
line. Like an ice level goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't that angle for this. And so we were looking at it from a kind of obscure angles and you're like, ah.
Yeah. When I started seeing those like higher up angles, I was like, there's no way this is getting overturned.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of thinking there's always that chance it just does because you're playing roulette all the times on reviews. But in this particular situation, the puck is just, or the puck is batted, but the view is just from such an angle that, like, if you're going to overturn that, you literally have to overturn everything because there's just nothing super clear on that. So Michigan does hold that review. They do get a 2-1 lead. And then kind of Portillo has his little moment behind the net. We've talked a ton about how Eric Portillo started the game, looked fine. He always loves to play the puck. Like, we've seen him come out to get pucks that a lot of times you think, oh, a lot of goalies probably aren't going to do that. He always seems to want to get the puck on his stick. He goes behind the net and fields it and moves it along. Well, it finally sort of caught up to him a little bit because he stands there and the guys don't necessarily come at him, so he's kind of caught with the puck and he has a Badger on either side, so to speak, and he tries to clear it through a guy. It fumbles out and he can't get back in the net. And who's there to sweep the puck away but Thomas Bortolo, who's at this point playing out of his mind as he's down on the ice and just clears it all the way down the ice. So they get an icing, but, I mean, that was a very nice play from a maybe Michigan's most talented offensive player.
Yeah, I mean, Bortolo had to lay out for that one. The old-fashioned, just sort of get down and you're playing the goalie now.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where we harp on this a lot with a certain defenseman in Michigan's D-Corps who's had problems moving the puck this year. And it is, I mean, that's a function of the position, right? Where half of playing defense is stopping the person from scoring or whatever, and then half of it is making the first pass out.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a goalie in that position, you come out to play the puck, you are in that position of the defenseman where you're making the first pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times it's rather simplistic, right? They have one particular thing to do. There's one defenseman there. You just move it over, and it's not hard. But there you had 2 forecheckers, and he just kind of did what you can't do there, which is just freeze.
And wait.
And it was kind of a deer in the headlights situation.
Yeah.
And then sort of realized, oh, this isn't good. And then, you know, just sort of got rid of it and kind of panicked. And, I mean, it was... I don't want to dissuade him from doing it altogether, but it comes with its upsides and its downsides, and sometimes that happens.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like you said, that is going to happen at times, but... I mean, I still trust him with the puck generally. I mean, that's something that you think he's going to be good at, but, you know, those things will come up to grab you. And then, you know, the scoring kind of continues for Michigan, and this time is a line that hasn't been producing a ton lately, and it's Johnny Beecher who drives the play really nicely. And we both sort of had different reactions to this, but he's sort of coming in from the right side at a diagonal angle, and instead of going right to the net, he kind of fades to the left through the slot and takes a shot. And this was not the best play from Badun as he leaves a rebound just out to his left, the attacking team's right, and Eric Ciccolini is right there for an easy dunk, and it's 3-1. And at that point, you know, it wasn't over by any means, but it was like, okay, Michigan has now gone from down 1-0 after sort of a, you know, 50-50, maybe 40-60 period to pouring on 3 within the first half of the second period.
Yeah, and I think that really the true turning point comes after this, in the sense that there's one very close chance for Wisconsin to score that would have made it a very different game.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, Michigan gets the fourth. And like this sort of just string of events is sort of what put the game away headed into the third.
Yeah, and what you were referencing is Portillo had a very... this was his moment to shine. If we talked about sort of his flub early on, this is where it he really came out and showed what he can do. Where so Power gets beaten down one of the sides, and he makes a nice save. And then he has a sequence where Jay Karen is trying to get the puck out. This is one of the first times I remember mentioning him sort of in a negative sense on the defensive end since that Michigan State series. But then Wisconsin gets a rush, and a shot is saved by Portillo, and then there's a pass that goes in front and to Stange, I think.
Stange,
who goes, I think, backhand to forehand,
yep.
And as he's doing that, Portillo sticks his extremely long legs out and sort of like, almost like a soccer player corrals a ball off of another guy's foot. He kind of takes the puck off of his stick and brings it in. He can't really recover it. It gets kind of moved around, and at this point, Portillo is down on the ice and, you know, I mean, he's gone all out to try to make this save. The puck gets out to the opposite side point, and Portillo is up, moving around, and a blast comes in from there. He's able to trap it underneath him and freeze it, and he makes about 3 to 4 saves within 20 seconds or so. And at that's what you were referring to when you're like, well, after that happened, you're like, well, this was Wisconsin's big chance.
Yeah, and I mean, we should note that Stange never made it backhand to forehand. It was on the way to the forehand
right.
that it got kicked away. And that was just sort of like, this is the first time that we've seen Portillo really make some huge saves of that
right.
kind. Like, he stopped a breakaway here and there, and obviously those are, you know, can be big situations, but at the collegiate level, a lot of times, sometimes they shoot right into your body or whatever, right? This was like A plus scoring chances.
Well, these are like some of that Hasek stuff that we referenced.
Right, yeah, I mean, this is like, whoa!
Completely reactionary, just need to make the play that needs to be made in that situation from an athletic standpoint, and he was able to rise
yeah.
up to the occasion, and then have the wherewithal to understand, oh, the play isn't over, I have to get up, I have to get into my position, and he totally walled off that last shot.
And then after that, I mean, again, you have the very, very soft goal that comes after it, and when those two things go in tandem, right?
Yeah,
it's just, this is it, more or less. Like, this just isn't Wisconsin's day.
Yep, and what you were referencing is, you know, KJ got in what looked to be a breakaway and never really found the puck. The puck gets out, and right after that, it gets dumped into the end, I believe on the same shift, and Luke Morgan just kind of picks the puck up loosely in his own end, skates to avoid a couple of guys, comes down the left wing, enters and is outside the dot and lets a shot go that it looks like it had Badun gets a piece of it, and it tucks through him and then off the post and in. And that was just kind of like, well, that's definitely it. And I think that was all but it for Badun as well, as Cameron Rowe came in to start the next period. As now we're getting to the end of the second period, it's 4-1. Wisconsin had a bright start, and before the end of the second period, they're all but out of the game.
Yeah, and I remember when Morgan scores the goal to go 4-1, my call on the broadcast was sort of like, oh boy. I mean, that's like scores, and then like, oh man. It's just a bad goal. It's just a goal you cannot give up. It wasn't, you know, it's not always about shooting position, right? There are some shots we think about Steve Yzerman's famous goal against St. Louis. Like, yeah, that was at the blue line with, like, no screen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also, like, one of the best shots you've ever seen. Like, just a missile bar down.
Yeah.
That's not what Morgan's shot was.
No.
Like, it was not a very good shot. It wasn't very fast. It was in the body. There was no screen. I mean, that just cannot get in the net. It just can't. And when you saw that, you were like, they have no choice but to, you know, send out the hook.
And both goalies for Wisconsin, Rowe and Badun, had been playing well up to this point. I don't think either of them had prolonged stretches of sort of bad games, per se. I mean, they haven't really given up a whole lot of goals or lost many games. So, I mean, they chose to go with Badun in this situation. And then we got to see a preview of what we'd see on Sunday in the third period of Rowe, and I thought he looked pretty good and was kind of like, uh-oh, you know, if we're going to get him the next day, it's going to be a very different game.
It's going to be
than
a tougher game, yeah.
Yeah, and we can zoom through the third period. There wasn't a whole lot that I had written down. I think Michigan was all but pretty much protecting their lead.
Well, they get a goal.
Well, they do, yes, you're right. And that is not really anything to do with Rowe. That was a shot, I believe, from deep that Granowitz deflects.
It goes off his body.
Yeah.
And, like, completely changes direction.
Right. And so then it ends up being 5-1. The one thing I wanted to mention is I was impressed that, so we didn't really talk about special teams at all, and that's because Michigan took a penalty, I believe, in the first period and just snuffed out the Badgers' power play. They couldn't even really set it up. It was a great kill from Michigan. And then there wasn't a penalty until really late at the end of the third period where Granowitz uses some really nice stick handling and skating moves to avoid a couple of guys, and one of the guys ends up pulling him down and gets a penalty. And the way that Granowitz has generally been effective in his career has been being a bigger body in front of the net and muscling guys and getting some tap-in rebounds. And so to see him be able to draw a penalty with his stick handling and his ability to move, I thought was a sign of good things to come for him.
Well, and then the power play they had after that was excellent. They don't score on it, but it was just an assault. And that was really some of Rowe's best work. And because the third period, Wisconsin was down 4-1. You thought they were going to be the team charging. And Michigan, that was their best period.
Yeah, where they didn't even score.
In terms of, they scored once, but yeah. You know, in terms of actually just dictating play. And Rowe put on a clinic throughout the period, but in that power play in particular.
The other thing I noted was that it looked like LaPointe, Phil LaPointe, as we've heard, because without there being met as many people in the arena, you can hear a lot of things that are said, and he is definitely called Phil by his teammates.
Well, and I mean, hockey's notorious for the nicknames and the shortening of names and that kind of thing, so it's not surprising.
Sure. But he has been put on the Van Wy line instead of Dakota Raby now for a few games, and he looks like he belongs on the ice. He doesn't have the speed of Raby, but he kind of came in and didn't play for the first few series, was sort of forced into action when Michigan was missing a couple of guys, and now he definitely looks like he belongs. His only problem is that he looks almost identical as one other player on his line, and therefore now it is tough to tell which one is Nolan Moyle and which one is Phil LaPointe.
I will say, I don't like, and this is something to talk about in Game 2, but it was there in Game 1, and despite how great that power play was, I do not like putting LaPointe sort of like behind the net and Beniers in front of the net. That doesn't make any sense to me. The reason for LaPointe to be on that power play unit is so he can be on the net front. He doesn't have the skill level to be, you know, at this point in his career, mm-hmm. to be a puck mover on the power play. So when he got added to it, I wasn't opposed, but putting Beniers in front of the net is not where he should be. The guy in front of the net either needs to be someone with a superhuman ability to deflect pucks, Joe Pavelski, etc., or, you know, a dominant net front, just, you know, machine in front
screen
of the
setter.
Screen setter, but also a guy that can clean up rebounds either through size or tenacity, whatever. Beniers needs to be the guy moving the puck around.
Yes.
I don't know what in the world he's doing in front of the net, but that needs to stop. Again, that's just a thing to think about. LaPointe should be in front of the net on the power play if he's going to be there at all.
So Michigan wins Game 1, 5-1. It was a relatively convincing win. I don't think that it was sort of 5-1 blowout. Wisconsin definitely had chances. Portillo played well. Michigan, I would say their defense was still good. I mean, I thought they managed the Caulfield line in that first game pretty well. He had end up getting some shots late in the third period, but had, I don't believe, had a shot through the first two periods, which is saying something about, you know, what he's been doing lately. So I think there's that to take away. And then, you know, once Wisconsin switched goalies, it looked like the next game was going to be probably a little bit different. So why don't we take a break and we will talk about that and maybe a couple other things.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Game 2, which normally we'd call the Saturday game, but this week is the Sunday game, we actually got to sit next to each other and not really have another responsibility except watching and taking notes on the hockey game. So that was sort of a new experience that we got to partake in. And we were sitting there right before warm-ups, and I looked at you and I said, all right, who's going to lead Michigan out? And we were both like, well, it's got to be Mann. And I said to you, but if it's Portillo, you could understand. Or maybe that's what you said to me.
Yeah, you were the one that was all on the Strauss train.
I said it was going to be Strauss, and you were like, but if it's Portillo, you'd understand, right? And I think we were both in agreement of that. But it was, in fact, Strauss Mann that came out and started in game two. And I think you had to, right? Like, you can't, like, he's not just on the bench now.
I mean, at some point, you have to pick your guy.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe, I mean, given, spoiler alert, what happens, but maybe the Minnesota series won't mean as much. But, you know, if someone wins game one of the Minnesota series and look good, that might be your guy at that time.
It's always one of the toughest decisions a coach has to make. And when it comes to the playoffs and, right, the moments when your season's on the line, at some point you have to ride the hot hand, whoever it is. And a lot of times you can't, you know, fall back on the old habits, right? Sometimes it's just we're riding this guy, and that's why you see how many goalies who are rookies have won the Stanley Cup. A lot. Cam Ward did. I mean, Ron Hextall got the Flyers really close back in the day. Patrick Waugh was a rookie when he won it.
Yeah.
Ken Dryden was a rookie when he won it. Like,
Brodeur was very young.
Brodeur was, it was like his second season, I believe. But, like, a lot of rookies can win it because a lot of times it's just who's the hot hand. Doesn't matter if we've got, you know, the $11 million goalie, like, if this guy is the best goalie, you got to play the best goalie. And we don't know who that is right now necessarily. It's probably still Strauss, man. But if it gets down into, you know, into March and one guy is a lot better than the other, you can't just say, well, he's the captain. You have to ride him. That's a loser's mentality. That's rewarding past results, you know, from years ago, right? Whoever's the best one needs to be the best one.
Well, and Jack Becker, who is the probably actual captain, the out-skating captain, is...
Yeah, he's not even in the lineup, so...
Yeah, he's been scratched for weeks now, so... So Strauss started, and Michigan actually started this game all right, and they drew a couple of penalties early on and had chances to get goals and looked not great.
The power plays were bad.
Especially after having a nice one at the end of game one and game two, their first one, I don't even know if they got it set up or even in the zone. I don't think that they even did, and... That wasn't good because, I don't know, you always get worried about these things. Like, there's a goalie change on the other side, and you need this win because you're chasing it. You're in good position. Then you start well by creating a chance. You get a penalty, and then if you don't take advantage of it or it doesn't look good, it's just kind of like one of those, you know, situations where you're like, oh, it's either going to go one way or the other. And when it goes that way, it kind of goes poorly, but... And that's kind of what ended up happening is Caulfield did get in on a 2-on-1 early, similar to what happened in the previous day, and Mann did make a nice save after Kerenen, I think, was caught up ice on it. But pretty soon after that, Dylan Holloway showed why he's one of the best players in college hockey and maybe used a bit of a pick on Keaton Pearson.
It was a really good play from Holloway, but it was a set play. I mean, it was pretty clear they're running that play to get him because it's great action. You have the misdirection where Holloway goes one way, cuts back the other side, freezes the defenseman. Because, I mean, one of the biggest things you can do when you're in the attacking zone is try and just sort of change the pace and, you know, get the defenseman have to move laterally and figure out, oh, where's the play going, right? Mm-hmm. Crisscrossing, that's a thing to freeze defenders. And it froze the defenders where all three Michigan guys were on to one side at the ice after the crisscross.
Right.
But it happened because of the pick on Keaton Pearson. Person gets slowed up just a quick second. Boom, Holloway's by him. They run the crisscross. The three defenders are frozen to one side. They get it to Holloway. He's all alone. And then just a beautiful shot.
Yes, he just goes bar down on man. And I don't think there's anything Strauss could have really done about that, especially given that he is on the smaller side and he's not as big as Portillo. And it was just, like you said, it was a great shot. And it's 1-0. And part of it's like, well, that's kind of like yesterday, but you know, you just never really want to continue to start this way. Michigan struggled for a long time getting the first goal in games, and that was not what happened during their rather elongated winning streak.
And by the way, we should point this out from game one. When Michigan held Wisconsin to one goal on Saturday, that was the first time all year where Dylan Holloway was in the lineup that Wisconsin did not score at least two goals.
Hmm.
So, I mean, this is a great offensive team, right? Yes. This is like, you were not going to hold them to just one goal again. And so when the first one went in, it was not... It was like, okay, there's going to be more scoring.
And then the penalty kills took over. Michigan gets a power play again, their second. And I think they didn't actually do as much of a bad power play as Owen Power had a takedown in the middle of it. And so they had a bunch of 4-on-4 time.
Owen Power just like runs into a dude and just like takes him out randomly. And it's not really a check. They just like lock legs or something. It's very strange to watch.
You have a thing that you like to look for is in one time every, I don't know if it's a game or weekend.
Weekend, basically.
Weekend, Owen Power just falls over at some point.
It's just like he loses coordination, basically. And that's what that looked like. He just looked uncoordinated. He didn't know what he was doing or who he was going to, like, he just runs into someone.
And you could hear, again, because there's not that many people there, the entire Wisconsin bench is like, hey, 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 over there. And you look up and then someone's laying on the ice and like, well, there goes power play number two. And so you get some 4-on-4, and then Wisconsin has their first abbreviated power play, and they do nothing, because at this point, penalty kills are ruling the day. And that all but ends the period. I think Michigan had a couple of chances with York making a nice pass, and then Morgan found Beniers, and his shot was just wide. I thought that had a really good chance to go in. They got it sort of behind Rowe, but just wide. And we ended up going to the first intermission, Wisconsin up 1-0 for the second straight day.
Yeah. Again, it's just kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens, right? Well, first period's okay, and not the best, gave up a goal, but there's going to be more scoring. And again, that was just my thought process early on.
Yeah, and then sort of in the second period, one of the things that we started to worry about and notice is that Keaton Pearson, who I thought had a decent game in the first game.
Well, everyone had a decent game in the first game. I mean, it was a really good, complete defensive effort.
That's true. That did not carry over well for him, and he started turning the puck over a few times and took a bad penalty, and it was just sort of not really, you know, we could talk about pairings for Michigan. You know, I mentioned this is like, they looked like in game one that they wanted to put Pearson and York on the Caulfield line. They didn't necessarily do that in game two, but you made a really good point as you said, you know, well, Michigan doesn't really have like a shutdown pairing. They have good defensemen, and I don't think there's any defensemen that they have that are like, all right, you got to keep this guy off the ice. But they didn't really have a go-to pairing when you're facing a line that may need one of those.
I mean, it's, you know, in college hockey, it's tougher to get those established rules. But, I mean, you do think about it at the NHL level. Certain teams have certain guys that, you know, are just really effective, right? Like, if you played the Devils in the late 90s to early 2000s, it was like your top line was going to face John Madden as the center, and you were going to face Scott Stevens and Brian Rafalski as the defensive pairing. I think that was who your first line was going to play every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And, like, your Colorado Avalanche won the Cup in 2001 because they could put one of three defensemen on the ice at all times.
Right.
And that was a big way they could. And, like, Michigan, they just don't have that. Like, who is the best defensive pair?
I mean, we kind of talk
probably
about
Power and Blankenberg.
That's
what
I think
you can make a case for any of the three. Like, there's none that's just like, this is the shutdown pair. Like, these are the two dudes that keep the puck out of the net. Like, they all have different strengths and weaknesses. And so, and you know, Garrett Van Wiseline is good defensively, but again, it's there's just not a sort of patented shutdown center or a shutdown defensive pair. You can't really sort of chess match it in that way.
So Wisconsin gets their second power play opportunity. They get maybe half a minute or so of zone time, and then nothing again, as we're still on the PK dominance. And then the Cole Caulfield show begins, where he turns Nick Blankenberg into a pretzel and gets a really nice shot on man. He gets a few other looks on that line or on that shift, and then the ensuing shift, man makes a big save, and it is starting to look like, okay, we have to get the next goal, because if Wisconsin starts rolling and piling up a goal or two, this might get out of hand quickly. And Wisconsin sort of controls more of that second period. But as a point for the good guys, Owen Power actually ties the game on probably one of the prettiest goals of the year, at least when if you're looking at capabilities from a defenseman anyway.
Well, you know, I responded to that goal by tweeting that NHL scouts would be very interested in that goal, because that is sort of the thing that has been talked about with Owen Power. It's like, you know, here's this big body guy, has these raw tools, but where is the dynamic ability?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't see it. We haven't seen it yet this year for the most part. He doesn't make great plays that, like, you sort of go, wow, right? I mean, yeah. you don't see him dazzle in that way. And so is it there? I don't know. But this was a sign that it might be. And this wasn't sort of, you know, rocket, you know, jetpack on his back, but it was really good hands, skill, to finish in tight with his size. I mean, that was something that you could look at and say, ooh, like that'll be on the highlight reel that is shown on, you know, the television after he's drafted, right? When they show the 30 seconds, these are the best his best plays. That'll be one of them, because it was very impressive.
Yeah, and KJ finally gets his second
primary assist, which is an interesting thing we haven't talked much about, but we have definitely mused about how the eye test for him isn't that great, but the stats are really, really there. I mean, his production is impeccable, almost all of his assists are secondary assists, which does give a little bit of a hint of where that disconnect might be coming from.
And he is playing with Beniers, which is going to explain some of it. And he's also had some power play time, so he's been put in good positions.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's not like he is the driver of a lot of these points, I don't think.
No.
And so in this case, he was, though. He had an
assist. I mean, yeah, but Power's the one who does the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, there's an interesting primary assist like the Bortolo-Brisson one we saw in game one,
right?
Where it's just a tap-in. And then this is, okay, it's a decent pass, but then, like, most of the work was all of the finishing that Power did.
Yeah, because Power gets the puck probably a stride or two inside the blue line and gets to the net and probably changes directions a couple of times and moves the puck around, faking a couple guys out, and then just scores really high, I think, over Rowe and underneath the bar. And like, that was a very, it was on the other end of the ice, so we couldn't see it probably as clear if it was on our end, but that was a very, very nice finish, and it was kind of one of those points where, like, oh, maybe this is it. You know, maybe this is where they've flipped the script, because at this point, Wisconsin was looking more or less in control of just the puck and gameplay, and this was a little, I guess you'd say, against the run of play a little bit. And that was not to be the case, because Michigan, you know, so here's the thing, is their penalty kill's been good, but what the problem when you face Wisconsin is you just can't give them too many chances. And in this case, they took their third penalty midway through the game, and despite basically owning the Badgers' power play with their penalty kill all weekend, the Badgers finally keep the puck in the zone and look like the 30% scoring rate that they have been lately, and just the puck is zooming around. Man is making save after save after save. I think he ended up having three saves and only like 40 seconds of power play time on this particular power play. And finally, Ashan just is able to roof the puck right over him, because at that point he's prone, has done everything he can do. No one can get to the puck. No one can clear it out. And, you know, at some point you just tip your hat and be like, you know, Wisconsin puts five really good scorers on the ice, and if they move the puck enough, someone's going to get a good enough shot that's going to go in.
Although we should note, the entry pass, not into the zone, but to get down to the goal line, I thought was way too easily made. I'd have to rewatch it to see who should have been obstructing it, but they were able to feed that right down to Ashan, and then no one was there to knock him off it. And then it's like, boom, one chance, two chance, three chance, and then it's in. And it's like, where is someone? Like, someone's got to move, either stop the pass from getting there, or once he gets it, you know, someone's got to be there to knock him down or push him off the puck. You can't just have a guy on the doorstep, you know, getting three chances from point blank range. So that part wasn't great.
No, and then Michigan does get a chance at the end of the period where they do have a power play, probably their best power play of the day. It's their third, and they hold the zone, but it looks like maybe trying to do a little too much, make too cute of passes, and they get a couple chances, but nothing that is dangerous or grade A, and then it carries over into the third, where there's about 20 seconds left, and that is pretty much all she wrote for that. And then that's when sort of the game, again, not ends, but it was really deflating because you have sort of a harmless rush down the wing, and a guy, I think it was, took a backhand shot from sort of the left side, and you said that there was a bit of a deflection off of man maybe out in front, and the puck is in the air and Dominic Mersch just like sort of baseballs it, not really up by his waist but sort of multiple inches off the ground, and gets it by man, and all of a sudden not really a huge scoring threat but just sort of a batted puck that he connects with from relatively close, and he had a guy on him, maybe not, as tightly bound as you'd want him to be, but he was able to get his stick in a free and just whacked it in, and all of a sudden, before you could really realize it, it was 3-1.
It's just a very random goal.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you watch and you're just like, huh?
Oh, wait, it went in? Like, what happened? Yeah.
It's just like, they're coming down the wing, and then all of a sudden it's in. You're just, I mean, my first thing was like, did he bat that out of the air? Like,
yeah.
What? Just very strange. And it was just kind of one of those things where it's not a bad defensive play, really. You're just like, yeah, this is the way this game is going. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes this doesn't really bounce your way. And that's just an unfortunate thing.
And then it got a little scary as Michigan got stuck in their own end a little bit, couldn't really get the puck out, and the Badgers had more chances to build on that lead and couldn't do it, so it was still kind of tight. But as you glanced up, as minutes ticked off, Michigan wasn't getting a great chance, and shots just kind of kept piling up for the Badgers, and they were sort of starting to run away with it, or at least leak a bunch of time. And down the edge, then Michigan did get a couple chances. KJ had a shot from the slot. I think Pasta might have gotten one, too, where guys are unchecked, and both shots just found Cameron Rowe as he played them perfectly. And I think KJ's maybe just went right into his belly. But, at that point, there's a few minutes left, and it's 3-1. Man, I think, is pulled, and Michigan tries to go out with an extra attacker and ends up getting one back, right?
Yeah, Brisson took a shot from the point that somehow found its way through. I think it hit off of Rowe and then kind of dribbled in, but it was definitely wasn't just like straight in, right?
So it wasn't like
bouncing into the net.
It wasn't like a planned block from him. It sort of hit him in a place he wasn't anticipating.
Yeah, and then I think it got, I don't know, either way, it was a rolling puck that like went in.
Yeah.
And it was very strange to sort of watch. That gave Michigan a breath of life. Now it's 3-2. There's only 2 minutes left. I mean, it's one of those things, right, where your perspective on how the game feels, if you're a fan, is so different depending on what seat you're in, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, for us, it's like, well, we got one back, but this game's probably over.
Yeah.
Whereas if we're the team that's got the lead, it's like, oh, no.
You're like,
here we go.
Yeah.
Right? So, like,
yeah.
It just feels totally different depending on which position you're in. And then it, really the air comes out of the hot air balloon not long after that when they bungle the pulling the goalie again.
And that's like the second time this year, right? I mean, that happened, I think, in one of the Minnesota games where they took a too many men
there
call.
There were issues with too many men, but it wasn't like that.
It wasn't associated with
the pulling of the goalie, no.
Well, I think I just associate with the too many men because it just seems like there's been not the greatest communication. Or, that hasn't happened in a while, but throughout this year, they've gotten a number of those calls, and this one couldn't have come at the worst time.
By the way, did you see the Tuukka Rask thing last week?
Yeah.
Where he just left the net in the middle of the play?
Well, did you hear his comment where he's like, oh, I thought we were down 2-1?
Yeah.
When it was, yeah.
And so basically, that's like what should have happened, right? Like, the goalie should have been skating off, but instead, someone went on early, and the goalie wasn't out, and there were, not great.
So Michigan still actually gets a couple of chances because Ohio State ices the puck in that situation.
Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you. Wisconsin. Wisconsin gets a couple of chances, and they ice the puck, and so you get offensive zone faceoffs, but nothing that was really...
There was like one decent shot, but then the final stretch of the game, like the last 10 seconds that goes into the corner, Johnson's got a chance to pass it to the slot and he whiffs. Yeah. And again, that's just kind of like, well, that's the way this game
that's
is.
That's the way this game goes. And that's and it ends 3-2. And, you know, Wisconsin probably outplays them in this game. They definitely created more chances and they buried the ones that they had, including some a difficult one that ended up being the winner. But, you know, when you look at the weekend overall, a split is probably a fair result. I think that both teams played pretty well. And the bummer for me with this was like, oh, we needed this. Like, they needed to step up and get this win. But, like, you just kept saying, you know, Wisconsin's a really good team. They've pretty much held them in check offensively. They've created chances. They've chased a goalie. Like, they've more or less held down their really strong power play. The thing to be frustrated about is what I ended up coming to was, like, they shouldn't have given away that Michigan State game. They shouldn't have given away the Penn State game. They shouldn't, you know, those were other times that, like, if you're going to be in a Big Ten race, you can't put yourself in a position where, hey, if we win the next 8 games, we got this.
Like, well, sure. I mean, it just so happens that the teams at the top of the Big Ten are very, very good nationally, and they aren't really making any mistakes. And, right. I mean, it's just so happened, by the way, that, I mean, Minnesota, again, is probably now back in the driver's seat as the favorite in the conference, but we'll see. As with, you know, the situation with Wisconsin is that they actually have messed up some games. They messed up against Arizona State, and that didn't count for the Big Ten race. It's not like Michigan, you know, Michigan's
That's
made
true.
Some mistakes, Wisconsin's made some mistakes. Wisconsin's mistakes just didn't count for for the conference. So, you know, it just kind of is the way it is. It's a very tough conference, and the other teams aren't making many mistakes. And Michigan, yeah, you know, the Penn State game obviously was rough, but it was a solid loss. The MSU game is the only one that really is,
right.
Like, that should have not happened. But otherwise, these are two good teams. They went up against each other. They played a pretty even weekend. They each got a win. I don't see any reason, if Wisconsin is a top team nationally, I don't see any reason why Michigan isn't, having watched these two teams play.
And
so
even,
that's what I'll say.
And even when you break down the different sections and areas of Michigan's game, I mean, they've been good in all of those things. And other than getting a power play goal this weekend, you know, they did what you asked them to do against a really good team. And,
yeah.
I mean, like, I would say that Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, they're all probably top 5-6 teams in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, pairwise is who knows what because of, you know, the way that college hockey set up this year. But in the, you know, we can transition into talking about the College Hockey News Power 16. Of course, you know, that's going to come out tomorrow and you'll be able to see it and we won't have that info right now. But, you know, Michigan's still in the top 8. And
they moved up in the poll today to 6 and 7, respectively, in the two USCHO. And,
which is a 2 seed.
Which is a 2 seed. And because St. Cloud had a tough weekend, Duluth had a very bad weekend. And those were the two teams right above Michigan in the polls and in the Power 16. So I assume Michigan will move up. And it's basically a position now where, you know, we don't know what the schedule will look like going forward, but we assume they will be playing Ohio State 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
2 games against Arizona State,
mm-hmm.
1 game against Michigan State, maybe 2, but 1 for sure, and then 2 against Minnesota.
Correct.
So in total, that's 7 games. If you sweep Arizona State, Ohio State, and Michigan State,
mm-hmm.
bank those 5, you can lose 2 to Minnesota and you're in the tournament.
Right.
If you win 1 against Minnesota, that just boosts your 2 seed case.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't mess up against the bad teams. And given where Michigan's currently ranked in the polls, you're fine. I mean, you've now gotten 3 wins against Wisconsin, 2 of which in regulation. As long as you don't get just, you know, blown out again by Minnesota, if you just even play tightish games. I mean, Michigan went 2-2 against Notre Dame. They're playing in a tough conference. They did well against Wisconsin. They're fine. Just don't step on the upturned rake, to bring back the old analogy, right?
Yeah.
Just take care of business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like you said, unless they do that, they're in the tournament. It's more just sort of positioning and in how good are they? Are they a team that
and by the way,
you know,
I don't think there's a major difference between a 1 seed and a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Honestly, I mean, it's
not anymore.
These are just 16 teams, and like you might, the only difference really is that the 1 overall, which Michigan doesn't have a shot for, gets to play the Atlantic Hockey champion, who's like really bad.
Yeah,
but they've actually won some games in the past, so it's just like.
You just want
the NCAA tournament is an exercise in randomness. It makes no sense. It awards champions who are not the best team often, which is generally a sign that your tournament isn't working. And we've complained about that many times over the years.
Yeah.
It's a horribly designed tournament, and the people who made it should feel bad. But, you know, wherever Michigan is, they'll have a shot to win, because any of the 16 teams that make it in will have a shot to win.
So, in the near future, though, Michigan is going to Columbus to face the Buckeyes, who they played, well, I was going to say a few weeks ago, but now it's really been a while ago because of our little pause here.
Time just goes by. Each week goes by, and we just blink.
So we can go through. You know, Michigan played them twice and kind of blew them out both times. Ohio State got a couple power play goals in the first game that made it closer. One goal was that really weird can't challenge the outside's goal, and the other one was with 10 seconds left.
And that game felt kind of close for a small period of time, but otherwise wasn't really, and then the second game wasn't close at all.
No, and the chances weren't close in the first one really either.
Yeah.
I mean,
Napier was the only reason that game was even remotely right. competitive for a stretch of time.
So in the pairwise, which no one really knows what to do with, Ohio State is
we shouldn't 40, do anything
42nd,
with.
which is low. So, I mean, if you're low in pairwise, that can't be good.
I mean, we watched Ohio State.
Yeah.
They're not very good. You could even say they're bad.
They're...
And they got just absolutely eviscerated by Notre Dame a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Lost both those games by
Columbus?
By a gazillion. I mean, this is not a good team. This is should be in pretty easy sweep.
I hope so.
As easy as a sweep can be in hockey. This is a team that Michigan is a lot better than. And we think matches up really well with, because Ohio State just couldn't stay with Michigan in terms of skating prowess in that
Correct.
First series.
They score about 19% on the power play, which is not what a little below probably what you'd want. Their penalty kill is not good. It's 77%. They don't really have any true like point getters. They have one guy who's getting 0.8 points per game. He's leading their team.
Yep.
And their goalie, I just took Napier's numbers. I didn't take them all, but he has a 0.908 save percentage, which is...
Far cry from normal Ohio State numbers.
Right, and their GAA is 3.17, which is also high. So there's really not an area that you can point to say, hey, this is where Ohio State can hang in. It's still randomness in hockey. That happens in every game, so you never know what can happen. But if there's a series that you can go into, especially on the road, a place where you can think Michigan is in as good a shape as you can be just heading into hockey games, it would be this particular situation. It'll be Friday, Saturday. Both games are at 5:30, I think, and the TV hasn't been announced, so hopefully one's on BTN. I assume if it's at 5:30, they're probably going to try to pair two BTN games with a 5:30 and maybe an 8 or an 8:30 game. That would only really make sense, if not probably BTN Plus, which I know we get comments. 5:30,
it's a weird time, but the plus side is it's only these games are only barely 2 hours. I mean, they go
they
by
are.
Really quickly. So you can watch the games, you know, eat a snack at 5 and then have dinner after the game ends.
And so this is like, I think your like selling point to me, right? Because
you've been wanting to go to Culver's with me forever.
Because it's your thing. This is like one of the defining characteristics of Alex Drain is your Friday night Culver's. And so this was part of our debate. Maybe we should have a Twitter poll as to like when the viewers think if we should eat before or after the game at 5 o'clock. Or at...
Yeah, but I don't eat dinner at 5 o'clock.
Well, I don't eat dinner at 8:30. So what is...
Okay, the game ends at 7:30. It doesn't take that long to get from this undisclosed location to the Culver's in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
That is...
I don't know, true. Maybe you drive 15 miles an hour, but...
have you seen how much snow is out there?
Okay, but this is Friday.
Okay.
I live one day at a time.
Do they deliver?
And by the way, you were texting me about Culver's ordering online.
Yeah.
If you, the Culver's experience is in the drive-thru and then eating in the car while you're there. And also,
do you think? Wait a minute. So you're thinking,
are they delivering, or is it just you order online ahead and then you go and show up and pick it up?
I think we probably have to order and pick it up.
Okay, that's at least more, because like if you can't deliver that, like the concrete mixer will be a little melted unless they keep it really
so
well.
So you're planning on eating in the parking lot?
When I'm hungry, that's where I'm eating.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
sometimes I bring it home.
But Friday, we can bring it home.
It depends.
Are you not committing to this?
I mean, no. You don't eat in the car?
No, I drive in the car.
Okay. What if you're on a road trip?
Well, okay. Yeah, but I don't think going to the Jackson Road Culver's is considered a road trip in this particular situation.
I've been to Culver's many times when I was very hungry. Some of them after working for MGO blog events. So I don't have the time, or I'm just... All right. Just eat right there.
But then you have to go to bed at 10 o'clock on Friday night.
No.
Will you be watching the Australian Open?
I'll watch the final, but on the weekends, I don't have anything to do in the early afternoon, so I can just wake up, you know, at my normal time and then watch it then. Tomorrow, I'm waking up very early to watch because I have things to do in the early afternoon, so I have to wake up earlier to get all of the matches in.
I see.
Anyway, this podcast is over. Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 3.13. For Alex Drain, David Nasternak, come back next week and get the resolution to the final 5 minutes of this podcast.